7:08 in the morning here on Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. Brian Edwards Tickert is on vacation. Before we get started this morning, I just want to thank all of our listeners who donated to our fund drive. We would not be who we are without you. That said, we did fall significantly short of our goal. So if you've been meaning to give, now is the time. KPFA.org is where you go to make that donation. We do still have our fund drive gifts online and available. But really and truly, you've heard me say it before, I say it again, the gift is KPFA on the air. And part of that gift is Mitch Jesuit live from Congress. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, Kat Brooks. And I have been told by KPFA management, and I too want to thank everybody who has made a contribution so far, but I have been told by KPFA management that because we did come up short in our fundraising goals, that they had enough money to send me to Washington, D.C. But as of now, there is not enough money to send me back.
Mitch, that might not encourage people to give.
I fear that might be the case too, Kat. So I really questioned if I could say it, but then I was on the spot. And maybe I should also tell you, I am coming to you from the House of Representatives radio TV gallery right now, where they make a room available for journalists to work out of. It is a shared room, so you may hear some background noise, but as of right now, I seem to be the only one making noise. So I guess I'm probably bothering everyone else, but I'll apologize to them later.
Mitch, what's the tone and tenor in the Capitol since you've been there? I mean, you were a correspondent there before, not during an impeachment inquiry, however.
No, never during an impeachment inquiry. In fact, I didn't begin my journalistic period of time in my life until just after the Bill Clinton impeachment. So this is the first one, and it's pretty intense. In fact, right now, they are holding depositions here in the House of Representatives, and William Taylor is here. In fact, he's just downstairs from where I am right now. Now, William Taylor is important because William Taylor led the embassy of Ukraine after the recall of Marie Yananovich, who was the ambassador to Ukraine. The Trump administration recalled her. She was somebody who was quite critical of the special prosecutor that President Trump and Rudy Giuliani wanted to investigate the Bidens, and also the theory that Ukraine was behind the theft of the DNC emails back in 2016. That special prosecutor had a really terrible relationship, it's been reported, with Marie Yananovich. So the Trump administration, President Trump himself actually, recalled her from that ambassadorship, and they put instead in that role, who I don't think was actually ambassador, because I'm not sure if he had congressional approval, but that was William Taylor, who took over the embassy. And William Taylor is important because William Taylor is the one of the three people who were involved in the text messages that were released several weeks ago between himself, Gordon Sondland, and Kurt Volker. And William Taylor was the guy who was saying, whoa, is this quid pro quo? This, you know, was raising the alarm about setting up a meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky in exchange for these investigations. He's the one that raised the alarm, and then he's the one that Kurt Volker then ended up telling him, no, you're misreading the president's intention. Let's not text message anymore.
Right, right. So
he's downstairs, yeah.
He's downstairs, but behind closed doors, it's not public.
That's right. And this has been the process the entire way. In fact, I was downstairs when he came in. I was downstairs when the Republicans came in masse, which was interesting. All the Democrats sort of came in individually, but the Republicans, led by Jim Jordan of Ohio, came down as a team, came down in masse together. And they actually addressed reporters for a short period of time, and they were complaining that that Republicans were not being given the ability, even members on the committee, to look at the transcripts of all these depositions that have been occurring over these past few weeks. Now, the question that comes after that, and I haven't been able to answer it yet, well, do Democrats have access to those transcripts as well, which I'm not entirely sure of? But this does point to a bigger issue that I think you're getting at, Kat, and that is the closed process of this so far. Now, there are three committees that are working together that are hearing these depositions. It's not just the House Intelligence Committee, even though that's the committee that's getting the most attention. It's also the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And they've been hearing these depositions, again, behind closed doors. Both Republicans and Democrats who are on these committees have been a part of these depositions. Republicans are complaining that these have been behind closed doors and it's a closed process, and that they're not given the same rights that the minority party had in previous impeachments, at least the modern impeachments, those of Nixon and Clinton. And we could talk about what happened there. Now, what the Democrats say about this being a closed process is they're saying that these aren't hearings at all, but they are depositions. In other words, the way that it was described to me, and in a moment, I think we'll hear an interview that I did yesterday with Democratic Representative Al Green, how it's been described to me is that the Democrats see themselves right now doing the work that a special prosecutor would have done if there was a special prosecutor right now investigating this. In other words, let's say Robert Mueller hadn't ended his investigation, which he had many months ago. If Robert Mueller was still doing his investigation, it's very possible that that's what Robert Mueller right now would be working on. But he ended that investigation several months ago. And as we know, Donald Trump made that call to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky the very day after Mueller testified to Congress. And so that's what the Democrats say they're doing. This is a deposition, and you can't have these depositions made public, because if you were, then all of these witnesses would then hear what other witnesses are saying, and it would give them the ability to conform their stories together. So that's kind of what the Democrats are saying this process is.
Mitch, I do want to go to the interview with Al Green, but first, is this also part of the sort of this longer tussle between...
Kat, I lost you there.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, Kat.
Okay, great. So I was saying that we'll go to the segment with Al Green in a minute, but I have a follow-up question, because there has also been sort of this tussle between the administration and the Democrats about what the administration's legal rights are and whether or not there needs to be, right, the full House vote on impeachment, and that would trigger certain rights that the president would have in terms of access to records or legal, his attorneys having access to records. Is this part of that same sort of muddy area that we've been in since this started?
It sure is. And this gets back to the previous modern impeachments of Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon. The House Judiciary Committee, all the hearings occurred in the open with the House Judiciary Committee in both of those impeachments. But you'll remember there was a special prosecutor or some kind of prosecutor working in both of those cases before. You had Ken Starr with the Bill Clinton impeachment doing all these deposition type of work. And then with the Richard Nixon, you had Archibald Cox followed by Leon Jaworski doing all that work. So in those impeachments, the special prosecutor did all the work, which we don't have now. Again, that's what the Democrats are saying. That's what they're doing. They're doing the work that a special prosecutor would do. Now, what the president would say, and Republicans in Congress are saying, that they the House should follow the lead of previous impeachment proceedings and vote in order to say this is actual impeachment proceedings occurring, that it would be in the House Judiciary Committee. And then what the minority party would get, what the Republicans would get, just as the Democrats got with Clinton and the Republicans got with Nixon, is that they would be given special powers in these hearings as well. In other words, especially the power to subpoena, so then the Republicans could call their own witnesses to testify. Now, this all very well may still happen in the future. My understanding, and if you lost me there, I apologize, but my understanding is that once these depositions are done, and somehow in some form they will be made public. And then once they do, I suspect this matter will be going to the Judiciary Committee, where then they will probably have open hearings.
That feels like a good sort of segue into this conversation now with Democratic Representative Al Green of Texas.
That's right. That's
what are your feelings on how the impeachment proceedings are going as somebody who has brought impeachment bills yourself a number of times?
Well, thank you. I'm honored that the process is moving forward, and it's moving forward in the spirit of what was done in 1868 with Andrew Johnson. There are so many people who don't understand what impeachment is all about, but they have loud voices. So I think it's moving forward appropriately. And to be very candid with you, I think that this process will culminate with the president being impeached.
Do you have any concerns about so far all the hearings, even though they're not hearings, I guess they're depositions, but what activities happening now is happening behind closed doors?
Well, I'm for transparency. I think that we should have everything exposed. But I also understand that this is the House Intelligence Committee, and it's not unusual for them to hold hearings as they are holding these hearings, but give each side an opportunity to be heard, ask questions, and at some point we get reports. I've never been to an intelligence meeting. My guess is that they're open to members of that committee and seems to be working okay. But I will say this, it doesn't bother me if they open it up to everybody. It wouldn't offend me at all.
What would you like that to happen?
Well, here's what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see a thorough investigation that is done by a committee that doesn't have the benefit of a special counsel. If we had a special counsel, the special counsel would do all of these things and they would be done just as Mr. Mueller did them. He didn't have the cameras there when he interviewed Mr. Cohen. He did all of this appropriately without the intrusion of cameras, because people tend to hear what others say and then they align their stories with what they have heard. So he had the benefit of separating people, getting stories, and you can better get to the truth this way. I think that this is what the committee is trying to do, to get to the truth. And to do that, you don't expose all of what is said so that others can adjust their stories. I think you want to get each person. I was a judge for 26 years. I know the value in enforcing something called the rule in court, where you have witnesses who are not testifying to wait outside so that they cannot hear what the witness is saying inside. And that way they cannot develop stories that will coincide with what they've heard. We do this in court all the time. So as a person who was a judge for 26 years, it doesn't offend me. But I understand how the public could want more. And I think that ultimately, the more will be shared.
And finally, what are your thoughts about how the impeachment inquiries began with the announcement from the speaker? Do you worry at all that this could set a precedent for future speakers of being able to bring impeachment proceedings without knowing whether or not the body supports it without a vote?
Well, Andrew Johnson was impeached in 1868, and there was no impeachment inquiry vote. So,
but you didn't even quite have the committees like you do now then.
Well, but they were closer to the framers than we are. So they probably had a better sense of what the framers of the Constitution intended than we do. So I don't think that there is a way. The framers were very brilliant, in spite of a lot of transgressions. You know, they were not perfect people. But on these questions, they were almost prophetic. Because if you read Federalist 65, they were preparing us for a time such as this and a president such as Trump. Read Federalist 65 and you'll find out what they intended impeachment be all about, and why they intended that it be in the House of Representatives, and why the Senate would be the place for the trial to take place, and why the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would preside when that trial takes place in the Senate. They were prophetic, and they never said that you must have a vote before you can start the impeachment process. If this were the case, I could not have brought impeachment three times. And each time it had to be approved by the presiding officer. So those articles were approved. And literally, if they had moved forward with 218 votes, we could have moved to impeach the president with those articles of impeachment. And by the way, he should be impeached for his bigotry. That was our original sin. And we ought not allow a president to weaponize bigotry and racism, homophobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, all of these invidious phobias, we shouldn't allow him to weaponize it without sanctioning him. The only sanction available is impeachment. If we don't sanction him, there are no guardrails. And he seems to think that we don't have the courage, therefore he sees no guardrails, therefore he does pretty much what he desires, including have his lawyer send the Congress of the United States of America a letter saying that his administration will not cooperate with the investigation, creating the constitutional crisis that we're in. We are in a constitutional crisis. We're at the crossroads of accountability. Either we will hold the president accountable or we will be held accountable ourselves. I think it's time for an impeachable president, one who has committed impeachable acts, to be impeached. And for those who are listening, please read what a crime is. A crime does not have to be a statutory offense punished by in some penal law. And read what impeachment means as it relates to a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor is a misdeed. So the framers were very smart. They gave us words that had multiple meanings. Misdemeanor, misdeed, as well as a minor criminal offense. Criminal high crimes, a crime, is when you do something that's very bad, or it can be something that is written in the law with penal punishments associated with it.
That was Mitch Deserich interviewing Democratic Representative Al Green of Texas. Mitch, are you still there with us?
I am, Kat. I am here.
Mitch, how many more people do we think or do we even know are set to testify in this phase of the process?
We got a number of more people, mostly from the Foreign Service Corps, who are set and scheduled, or at least have been requested to come give depositions to these three different House committees. So there are three different House committees that are doing these depositions. There are a number of more people from the Foreign Service Corps who are scheduled to still come in. It looks like the process has been delayed some because Elijah Cummings, the former chair of the House Oversight Government Reform Committee, who passed away last week, is going to have a lay in state this Thursday. So they are postponing depositions that were planned for Thursday and Friday. Now, the lay in state for Elijah Cummings, who used to be my go-to guy when I was a daily reporter here in the previous decade, because he was the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus when I was a Capitol Hill correspondent. He will be the first African-American lawmaker to have a lay-in state. The last person who had a lay-in state, you'll remember, was John McCain after he died. Elijah Cummings will not be the first African-American, though, to have his casket in the Congress for people to pay their respects to. The first person was actually Rosa Parks, but she wasn't a lawmaker. The second person was a man by the name of Jacob Chestnut, who was a security guard here in the late 1990s, who, when a gunman entered the Capitol, confronted him and was shot and killed. They were two African-Americans who, but they called those, if you're a civilian, they call it a lay in honor. They only call it a lay in state if you are a lawmaker. And so Elijah Cummings will be the first African-American lawmaker to have a lay in state. That will happen on Thursday. So depositions both for Thursday and also on Friday, when there will be the funeral in Maryland for Elijah Cummings, have been postponed. So this is going to push the process all back a little bit.
Mitch, one more thing before I let you go back to doing what you're doing. You know, yesterday, as we were prepping for this segment, I asked you about the acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, about his quid pro quo statement and where he said that, you know, people should get over it. And you said that you felt like people were making much ado about nothing. Why?
Kat, you can't be telling people what I say in text messages. Don't you see what happened to William Taylor and the people who are testifying today? I mean, you know, I can say almost anything on those things.
I use my discernment.
I might be wrong, actually, on that. That's my way of prefacing. I could be wrong. I'm not sure if Mick Mulvaney will have a job much longer. And it could be that he misspoke. right? It could be that he wasn't articulate in what he was trying to describe, and which, you know, when usually when you're trying to get, you know, whether you've used the term quid pro quo, but or not, usually when there are some type of foreign affairs, or usually when there's just politics, you're usually trying to receive something for something, right? I wonder if that's what he was trying to say. But, you know, if you listen to conservative commentators, especially if you watch Fox News, as I did last night, you're hearing a lot of conservative commentators calling for him to be fired and for President Trump to put in a team that's going to create a war room and be a lot more aggressive in fighting this impeachment inquiry. There's this sense right now of that the White House has not taken the impeachment inquiry very seriously and has not prepared to fight it the same way, say, Bill Clinton did in the late 1990s. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Mick Mulvaney has been sort of the number one guy in some ways for Donald Trump, because you remember, not only is he his chief of staff, he had him head the Office of Management and Budget for a time, had him head with some people would call the dismantling of the Consumer Financial Bureau Protection Agency. Mm-hmm. He was heading that as well. So there was a time where President Trump was putting Mick Mulvaney to put out all the fires that were occurring within the administration. But now the fire might be Mick Mulvaney himself. So certainly possible that, and I don't have any inside information that he's going to be gone, but it wouldn't be surprising if he doesn't, if we have a new chief of staff here in the next week or so.
All right, Mitch, we're going to leave it there until tomorrow morning at 7:08 when we speak to you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kat.
Mitch Jesrich is the host of Letters in Politics at 10 a.m. here on KPFA and affiliated Pacifica stations. He is in Washington, where he's covering the impeachment inquiry from Congress. And folks, we have been staying true to this impeachment watch every single morning, even through our fund drive, 7:08, helping you understand the historical context of impeachment, what's happening right now, getting the right analysis and commentators and guests, and walking us through what is happening as the White House turns and this impeachment inquiry moves forward. If this is the kind of coverage you value, we need you to show your love. KPFA.org, KPFA.org. Donate right now. Give what you can. Become a sustainer of your station. $25 a month $25 makes you a member. $25 a month makes you a superstar. KPFA.org. Coming up next, we are going to turn our attention to Syria and what is happening in the wake of the rollout of American troops. We're going to be speaking to Curry Peterson-Smith, the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. That's coming up next after the news.